I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our community conversation about how Indianapolis and Indiana should respond to the outbreaks of violence last weekend. We will talk in the shadow of tragedy as the city begins the memorial services for slain police officer Perry Wren. My guests will be the Reverend Horatio Luster, who is a volunteer with Indy's 10-Point Coalition, and Chris Gall of Visit Indy. Please join this important conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to continue our community conversation about curbing violent crime in Indianapolis and in Indiana. If you would like to join this important conversation, and I would urge you to do so, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. We've got a couple of great guests to discuss this important subject, starting with here in the studio, the Reverend with me, the Reverend Horatio Luster, who volunteers with Indy's 10-Point Coalition. Reverend Luster, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And joining us by phone is Chris Gall, who is the Vice President of Communications and Marketing with Visit Indy. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on, John.
Certainly. It's good to have both of you here. Well, I guess everybody has been saying after, you know, the events of last weekend where we had seven people shot in Broad Ripple, we had a police officer killed, and, you know, we've already had recorded more than 70 homicides in the city this year, that we need to have a community effort and a community conversation about this. So I guess I will begin that by saying, where should we start that conversation? Reverend Luster, I'll start with you.
Well, as you said, John, we have had a very tumultuous last week. We have had a very tumultuous year this year in the city of Indianapolis. Unfortunately for us, such tragedy has to come about in order for us to even begin to engage in the conversations that we have now begun to engage in. I think that where we are right now is an excellent place to start, just where we are right now, because you have to start somewhere. So this is excellent right now. The city in itself, the city of Indianapolis, is sick and tired of the violence that has been going on. And even from the community to IMPD to various other entities, people are now wanting to find out, what must we do? What can we do? So this right here is an excellent start, I believe.
Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I would tell you, certainly as the 13th largest city in the nation, we're not immune from violence. We're not immune from issues that affect other major cities. And so what I think is incredibly refreshing from our standpoint is that the community is angry. We're upset collectively, whether you're in the nonprofit sector, whether you're in the business corporate sector. This has impacted us all, and we're upset. And so we're motivated, to the Reverend's point, to do something about it. I would argue that in other major cities, our size, smaller or larger, this doesn't happen to this degree. We don't round the troops and say, what's going on? What do we need to do next to get better, to get healthier? And I think that's the Indianapolis way. We refuse to give up, and we try harder.
And your point is well taken in that this city is not alone in dealing with it. Chicago obviously had a very bad weekend last weekend.
Correct.
Too. But go ahead, Chris.
One of the cities we compete with viciously every day to retain, to draw in visitors, to call on conventions, to have millennials relocate from, is the city of Chicago. And certainly, again, to your point, John, 60 shootings, I believe, last weekend in Chicago. So it's happening in other cities. Certainly, it's just not the Indianapolis way.
Well, I think the thing that has really disturbed people is the fact that it seems to be on an upswing. I mean, last year was a much worse year than the one that preceded it. We seem to be on pace to break that dubious record. So it might be worth stepping back and asking, you know, what brought us to this point? I mean, what is causing this upswing? And I'll start with you, Reverend.
I think, John, that probably the fact that we're seeing Indianapolis is a thriving, it is a growing city. Mm-hmm. I think the numbers, if I'm not mistaken, I think we are probably close to 1 million people here in the city now. Mm-hmm. In that we are getting the nature of surrounding cities, Chicago, Detroit. We're getting people that are migrating here from other parts of the country. And it's not to take away from the fact that we already have had a problem here in the city before with youth to a mm-hmm. degree. Now that we're getting foreign individuals or foreign entities that are entering into the city, now that same thing that they lived in other cities, they're bringing into the city of Indianapolis. And I think that a big part of this is because of that.
Chris, what is it doing to the perception of the city? I mean, that, you know, in some ways, Indianapolis, as you say, you talk about an Indianapolis way, we've sort of balanced back and forth between being either a city or the largest small town in America, one or the other, you know, and choosing the identity is whichever one suits us best at the moment. What is it doing in terms of your efforts to sell the city to visitors and to businesses that might want to locate here?
Yeah, sure. So since 1923, Visit Indy has been around selling and marketing Indianapolis, and we work with a sense of urgency every day to market the city outside of the city. And to date, as of this afternoon, we've not received any negative backlash from a meeting convention decision maker or a visitor who has said, I am not likely to travel, or I'm worried about my safety in Indianapolis. So as of today, we haven't seen repercussions from this past weekend's violence. Now, having said that, the city's image is an ever-changing, ever-evolving, pulsating brand. It's affected by thousands of variables: who the mayor is, what the weather's like, if the Colts are winning, who's coming in and out of town, you know, what the weather's like. And so certainly it doesn't help us, it doesn't aid us when there's national media exposure talking about a violence occurring in Indianapolis. That doesn't aid us in enhancing the perception of Indianapolis being a safe city. I'll tell you, we polled meeting decision makers last spring and again this spring, and when asked to use words to describe Indianapolis, safe came in at number two last year and in 2013, and this year came in at number five. So still a word that simmers to the top when you are asked meeting decision makers how they would describe Indianapolis.
But it's on a downward trend, though, if you've gone from two
sure.
to five in a year.
I think some of that we're seeing some backlash from panhandling, which is another topic of concern for us. But yeah, certainly it didn't rise.
We are talking about curbing violent crime in Indianapolis. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Chris, in terms of, we talk about the perception, and you talked about national media. One of the things that I noticed last weekend was really the role also of social media mm-hmm. in this. I can't tell you how, you know, Facebook, all of that, how that just seemed to explode with people from around the country who are native Hoosiers or whatever, saying, you know, what the heck is going on mm-hmm. in my hometown? I mean, what, you know, there is a shocking quality to that. Does that make it a little more difficult to get a handle on what it's doing to how people view the city?
Yeah, so we watch daily the trends in media reporting as it relates to Indianapolis. And we watched that ebb and flow through the weekend and then spilling into the first part of this week. And I think you saw outrage over the weekend. You could say that social media was in disbelief, especially with the Broad Ripple shootings, because of this being a friendly neighborhood. David Letterman's grew up there. You have all these boutiques. It's gay friendly, et cetera. And why in the world would there be violence? I think this disbelief hit the Twitter sphere and social media. And then it turned to outrage and anger. And now we're seeing especially citizens who have moved on to another city who are rolling up their sleeves and saying, how can I help? But certainly, again, we keep a watchful eye on media and how people are reporting on Indianapolis and how it could impact the future of the city.
We've talked about how other people view the city. Reverend Lester, how does this view the way we view ourselves here in this city? I mean, what does it say to young people and all of that who are growing up here about the place where they live?
Well, I mean, the number of events, as Chris is saying, it speaks volumes in so many different ways. I would like to just, maybe if I could, just kind of address the previous statement also.
Sure.
about the ideology or the mindset of the people today, even across the nation, that were at once upon a time residents here in the city of Indianapolis. Again, I reiterate the fact that, you know, Indianapolis is a growing city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now coming into the sphere of other things that other major cities oftentimes have to deal with. One of the greatest things that I have found in life that's very hard, and that is for people to make adjustment to change. This is shocking, the events that are taking place here in the city of Indianapolis, because whether it's residents who reside here at the moment or residents that have lived here and have moved out of the city of Indianapolis, they have never known this city to have to engage in the things that they're engaging with. And something that Chris is touching on right there, how it has not really infected or affected in a negative way as far as people thinking about having conventions or different things here in the city. With that, I see a glimmer. I see a light of hope. However, there is a challenge here that we as the citizens of Indianapolis, whether it's from the business sector, from IMPD, whether it is from the faith base, whatever it might be, we all have to join together to make it even better than it has become.
How should we go about doing that? I mean, how should we go about joining together? That is a theme, but there is an awful lot of this that's, you know, come together and do what? I mean, what should be a practical step we could do to make this city safer? Reverend Lester.
I think that one of the most practical things that we could do at this point is we have to see what lane are we in.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to stay in our lane. We have to continue doing what we're already doing. And then we have to intensify that. We have to increase it. We have to look at where our resources and our energies are being put in to diminish the problem. But whatever we do, we cannot stop doing what we are doing now, because in the reality of it is, there have been some very effective and productive things done here in the city of Indianapolis.
We've had Prosecutor Terry Curry and Public Safety Director Troy Riggs on the show in recent weeks, and they both in one way or another have made the case that, you know, at some point we're going to have to start sinking more funds into public safety. Chris, how realistic is that in this sort of tax-phobic environment and era?
Well, you know, it's a delicate topic. It's where is the city with already a cash-strapped budget going to be able to put towards education, towards public safety, towards attracting new businesses and economic development? You know, I think for the workforce that Mayor Ballard and IMPD has been able to put out there, they work really hard. I think that you'd find no better trained and ready to hit the streets work police force in the nation. I think having said that, you can always make a point that you need more public safety. From talking to Director Riggs, I know and hearing him speak in the community, it's also breaking down where are these crimes occurring. Mm-hmm. Are they behind closed doors? Are they out in public? A lot of these are happening behind closed doors. And I think as a community, we need to keep challenging ourselves on how we close the gap between the haves and the have-nots. those who have education, who have health insurance, who have education and financial wherewithal, and those who do not. And closing the gap there will help us be a little more peaceful as a community.
We are talking about curbing violent crime in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimits@wfyi or on Twitter at @wfyi. My guests are the Reverend Horatio Luster with Indy's 10-Point Coalition and Chris Gall, VP of Communications and Marketing with Visit Indy. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking, continuing our community conversation about how we curb violent crime in Indianapolis. My guests are the Reverend Horatio Luster, who's with Indy's 10-Point Coalition, and Chris Gall, who is vice president of communications and marketing with Visit Indy. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Oh, why, thank you so much for taking my call. And as a fifth-generation Hoosier, and having been born and raised in Indianapolis, but by progressive parents who were Republicans, to see our responsibility as an umbrella for all kids. And to your guests, I say hi and thank you.
Hello.
Mr. Kroll, I want to address your question, and I have my own question related to, first of all, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
Succinctly, I am a veteran IPS parent. Our daughter, who is now 25, had an excellent, excellent education through IPS up until freshman year of high school. And that included being exposed to and becoming friends with and witnessing how many of those friends were mistreated, disrespected, and outright ignored by the institutions of this city, including at that time, we're talking 10 years ago, and many of us parents and some of the kids predicted that where we are now is exactly what would happen. So many of those kids, particularly the boys who are now young men at 25, are daughter's age, so I speak from eyewitness experience, were disregarded, disrespected, misrepresented, and not actively engaged at 15. So at 25, why in the world should this particular group respect or care about or fear any of our institutions, or for that matter, white people, because so many of them have not had the direct experience of a nice white person caring about and speaking with them. Many of them have, to this day, have not had conversations with white people. My dad and Lou Bowes of Bowes, McKinney, and Evans were roommates at Swarthmore College. They came back with Paul Buchanan to help work in the city. Lou Bowes wrote UniGov. I know for a fact. I have my. I was told by my mother, and I have the papers from my father. UniGov was written on a racist note, and I will not quote what Lou Bowes said in our living room. This is all about the underlying racism in this city in particular that we're not supposed to talk about because it's not civil. Now, my question becomes, so anyway, that's how we got here. My question is twofold. Why are these illegal guns continued to be flooding the city? This is not the first year. It's been going on for how many years now? I know to get rid of them is very dangerous. But again, my question is, Why don't we hear anything about, what is it, the FBI, the National Guard, the IPD? Why is that not being addressed, the illegal stuff? And number two is, how many white people are willing to have and risk beginning to have real-life conversations and maybe take initiative with many of the young black people who have never had the experience? And I'm not talking about having a conversation with the African Americans at Brebeuf or North Central or Carmel. I'm talking about here in the city. And I know for a fact that many of these young kids have not from a minister who is over in one of the most dangerous parts of city of Indianapolis, over at Cliff 30th, and he's been building bridges slowly. I think it's coming together. One of the goals is to expose the kids to white people who care, who were involved with the civil rights movement, who will stand up when they see police and justice. I'm under a legal gag rule not to talk about what happened around Butler University while the white kids got away and still do with illegal behavior and the black kids who live right there getting picked up and being held without due cause, due process. So I'm back to what's going on? What are the steps being taken to address the illegal gun trade? And number two is, are there white people who are willing to take the initiative to begin to meet and talk with some black people, black young people, so they have a reason to respect the law, to give a benefit of the doubt. Mm. At this point, the kids who are doing this, the young people who are doing this, based on what I witnessed, it's not surprising they don't have any respect for or are not afraid of. Why should they? The institutions and the dominant notion of Indianapolis has not respected them, taught them, cared about them, let alone talked with them.
Okay, Margaret, let the guest respond a little bit. But thank you very much for the call and the questions.
Much.
Thank you.
Racism is alive and well. It's just more covert than it used to be.
Thanks very much.
Take care. Thank you.
You too. Thanks very much for the call. Well, let's talk about there too. Two subjects there, really. And how much of this, I'll try to boil down Margaret's point, how much of this is a product of a racial divide here in the city? Reverend Lester, I'll start with you, but I think Chris's insights will be valuable on this, too.
I think that Margaret, is that her name?
Margaret, yeah.
Margaret, there's validity to the totality of the statement that she made. However, we cannot allow it to just be the primary root of the violence in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Is there racism in the world? If we're having a conversation and we keep it, as we say, for real, yes, there is racism in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot deny that. However, we cannot allow that to become an excuse to allow at random just the violence mm-hmm. in the city. We can't allow that to be. Nor can we build anything from that. Is it a truth? Yes, it's a truth. Is it an issue that has to be addressed? It's not a new issue. It's an issue that calls for continuation. And I believe, just from my experience, that we do have some whites in the city that are reaching out. Maybe they're not ones that she may know. Mm-hmm. But I know that we work with, from the 10-Point Coalition, me as a minister mm-hmm. of the gospel in the city, we work with white people that have a heart mm-hmm. for inner city children. When we talk about illegal guns, true, the validity again. However, while we're talking about illegal guns, we have to talk about, we cannot afford to ignore addressing gun violence, period. Mm-hmm. Because every violent act with a gun is not necessarily by an illegal gun. Mm-hmm. Now, do we have a rash of illegal guns? We sure do. Hitting the streets every day. You can go to almost any street corner today in the city of Indianapolis, and a 13-year-old can buy a gun. Well, it has to be an illegal gun because a 13-year-old cannot go to a gun store, and he doesn't have, he's not of age to address the Second Amendment, mm-hmm. which is his right to bear arms. So, yeah, there is a rash of illegal guns that are flooding the city. Mm-hmm. With that, again, she has validity in what she's saying, and there are issues here with percentages that contribute to the violence overall.
And I want to talk about the gun issue a little more because we've gotten some email questions on that as well. But, Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts on the nature of Margaret's argument that to some degree this violence is a product of a racial divide and, you know, what she was really saying is a cultural disregard for young African-American males.
I'm personally, as a resident, I'm glad Margaret's fired up. I'm appreciative of her passion because that means she cares. We should be fired up. I would tell you that I had an opportunity a few months ago to hear the Honorable David Shaheed, judge of the Marion County Superior Court, talk. He was relaying that black juveniles are three times more likely than white juveniles to enter into our court system here in Marion County. And, you know, that should outrage all of us. I know that I've also heard Monroe Little, associate professor of history and African studies at IUPUI, talk about poverty, the role poverty has in generating crime. When you're hungry, when you don't have money, you're desperate. Mm-hmm. And how we close those gaps so that poverty is stripped out of the equation. I would tell Margaret that as you look at potentially the racial divide, that you have industries working daily with a sense of urgency, like Goodwill, who has their Excel centers scattered around the state to help people get not a GED, but a high school diploma. You've got LISC and the good work that they're doing to rehab our neighborhoods. You've got Shepherd Community Center, Tim Street, has rolled up his sleeves and is making sure that people on the Near East Side of Indianapolis are getting off the streets and into programs. So you look at Eskenazi Hospital opening and the ability to have people at poverty and at risk get better health care. So I think there's been a lot of good work done. Mm-hmm. That's not to strip away this crisis we're amidst, this weekend crisis. But I'm glad Margaret is fired up, and I hope we all are.
We are talking about how we go about curbing violent crime in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can reach out to us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a couple of listeners have, Brent and Ken, who've sent us emails, and you can do that by reaching out to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Their questions both, to some degree, are about guns, which is also one of Margaret's questions. And Brent says, basically, I wonder if Mayor Ballard's still glad that the city booked the NRA convention, National Rifle Association convention. Ken says, you know, what kind of person / mother buys an assault rifle? And I guess I'd like to take that and talk a little bit, and I should say as a backdrop, too, with both Public Safety Director Riggs and Prosecutor Curry, when they were on this program, they were arguing that the free flow of guns is a contributing factor to what we're seeing right now, that things escalate when there is a gun around. And Prosecutor Curry, in particular, just 2 days ago on the show, said that he's pretty much given up on getting any sort of help or support from the state legislature on that. So could we talk a little bit about the role of guns and the flow of those guns into this community, what it's doing? Chris, I'll start with you on this one.
Well, you know, it's no secret that, you know, one train of thought is guns kill, mm-hmm. and that certainly these illegal firearms are getting into the hands of people who shouldn't. Repeat offenders, people who have been locked up and then are let out. You know, I think, you know, in April, the city hosted the largest convention we'll host this year. The National Rifle Association came, and certainly they have a huge footprint here and economic impact and keeps our hospitality and tourism community moving forward and having employment. It also brought into light this very topic. How does Indianapolis, the state, approach gun control and its gun laws and its gun frequency? So I actually think to the email question about is Mayor Ballard happy we host the NRA from Visit Indy's perspective, certainly we are. It's something we're trying to rebook again because it there's an economic boost, but also it brings, again, into discussion these very delicate topics and forces our community to talk about it, which isn't easy and not something that we're always readily wanting to discuss.
Reverend Lester.
Certain things I echo in concert with Chris about. However, I want to reiterate again, we put the emphasis on illegal guns, and it is an emphasis that has to be acknowledged. However, I'm concerned about gun violence, period. Because you have people that actually are old enough to have a permit or a license to carry a weapon, but the individual is not mature enough to be able to discipline themselves in regard to the use of that weapon, when to use it. I have a major issue. I see guys walking around, and again, I don't want to be abusive to the Second Amendment, you know, to your rights to bear arms. But why do you need to walk around with your gun hanging out, showing, even if you have a permit or a license to carry it? Again, I will address the fact that there has to be stiffer laws put into play regarding gun crimes. When a person take a gun and commit a crime with it, whether you're black, white, red, yellow, or orange, there has to be stiffer laws for people who commit crimes with guns.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Melanie, and if you'd like to connect with us via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. It says the Indiana General Assembly keeps passing laws that put more guns out in public. Now guns can be carried onto school grounds due to Senate Bill 229. Let's hear discussion of sensible gun measures. Major Davis Jr. used an assault rifle. I mean, are there, Reverend Lester, I'll start, are there some changes we could make in Indiana law regarding weapons that make a little more sense?
I believe so. Yes, John, I believe so. I believe that we could do, we could be a little bit more meticulous even when we're looking into people's backgrounds. I would like to just throw this in just for good measure. One, when we talk about violence, and the subject is about the violence in the city, and then we incorporate the gun piece to it, that we have to understand that violence in itself is a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone out here is not violent that's carrying a weapon.
No.
However, there should be a little bit more meticulous about individuals that they're selling weapons to. What is their real background? Here you can go to any store. If I'm not mistaken, if you pass the background check, and you can go into any gun store, and I'm not going to name any of them, and you can purchase an assault weapon and walk out of the store with that weapon. How much really background check has been put on that individual? Okay, maybe they're not a felon. And again, mm-hmm. we talk about legislation here. Maybe they're not a felon. However, what is their mental capacity? There needs to be something else put into place that will address these issues. Legislation has to play an important role. When you look at not just legislation, because we can bring laws into mm-hmm. play all day long. But what is our judicial system doing with it? Mm. When individuals are arrested for violent crimes, how many of them are being let back out on the streets that actually go and get guns? If you check the stats, you will find out that 9 times out of 10, people who commit crimes and people who are involved in criminal activities, they have a history of this.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be something put in place that when these people, certain people are arrested for violent crimes that they commit, there needs to be a little bit something more profound put in place.
And Prosecutor Curry and Public Safety Director Riggs had made a similar argument that there needs to be intervention earlier before
yes,
these things escalate. Also should say that we've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Kay, and if you'd like to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. She wanted to say the Universal Circus, the city of Indianapolis, and partners present Your Life Matters, Peace in the Streets Parade Walk, and it's Sunday, July 13th, this Sunday. Route will begin at 2440 Station Road, and that's in Brightwood. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. We are talking with the Reverend Horatio Luster and Chris Gall of Visit Indy. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about curbing violent crime in Indianapolis. My guests are the Reverend Horatio Luster, who volunteers with Indy's 10-Point Coalition, and Chris Gall, who is vice president of communications and marketing with Visit Indy. Reverend Luster, I realize I've been remiss. I probably should have asked you at the beginning of the program, what is the 10-Point Coalition? I know, but some of our listeners may not.
Yeah, we have been engaged in such conversation. It's just 10-Point Coalition, we are a faith-based initiative that comprise of diversity of ministries, ministers, churches, business people, people in the community. And primarily, we come to out and we engage to empower for improvement. We serve somewhat as community activists to do not just intervention but prevention and getting out into the communities and speaking with youth, and not just youth, but we really focus on youth and youth violence and what we can do to promote a healthier city and communities.
We are talking about curbing violent crime here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon to your host, to the host and the guest. And I would like to say, first of all, I did the first call, and I hope I did as long as they did, but I would like to address something that if you look at what happened the weekend of the violence that happened here. Mm-hmm. We had violence in Chicago as well. Mm-hmm. And not to mention today, you even had someone shoot up a whole family. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, you know, you can throw laws out there to, you know, try to address the situation, but of course that's not going to bring the solution to the problem. And as far as racial, well, those people, they were not, they weren't black. Some of them were white. Some of them were some other color. Now, I'm only saying this is the answer, which is a higher, it's something that you may agree with, you may not. Is a lot of it has to do with homes and people bringing things into their home on a spiritual level. And what I mean by that is this, that God said that a man that troubles his own home will inherit the wind. You have situations where people that are suffering are paying for things that have happened a while back. And so we're seeing a result of God's judgment. Same thing when it comes to nations. It says in Ezekiel 7, it says, violence has risen to a rod of wickedness. So it says, make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crime. So a lot of things we have to expect because of the simple reason there is what you would call God's judgment, and he will inflict that up upon nations, if not the world.
Bill,
I mean, it's not only the violence is here, but you see it around the world as well.
Bill,
and
I just
it's not going to get better, but it's going to get worse.
Bill, I want to step in and just ask real quickly. Then, really, what you're saying here is that the crisis is spiritual in nature, right?
Most definitely.
Okay. Well, let me let Reverend Luster speak to that. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Yeah,
I think that is a very prudent statement that you're making, Bill. And I do believe that there is a serious degree of spiritual warfare behind this. And I would like to draw from even 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people that are called by my name would humble themselves and pray, seek my face and turn from the wickedness of their ways, then will I hear from heaven and heal their land. Our land truly does need healing. I believe that in lure of everything that's going on, that the spiritual part of it has to be a very prudent part in everything that's going on. I agree with you that we can continue to make laws all day long. However, making laws is one thing, enforcing laws is another thing. And I would also like to go to the scripture and proclaim that the scripture teaches us that the law is for the lawless. So the law is there to judge the lawless. And in reference to what you're saying in reference to God, you're absolutely correct, because I love scripture and I understand that scripture and prophecy must be fulfilled. And that is a part of what we are seeing today. However, in reference to that, if you study the Old Testament, you'll find out that every time God brought judgment upon a nation, that God also used individuals. God is the only one who can redeem through repentance. However, God used people. All throughout the scripture, we see where God used mighty people. He used dedicated people to be the forerunners to bring God's mercy and his grace upon a nation.
We've also gotten an email from a listener named Kenny who says, social scientists have known since the early 20th century how to create social conditions that minimize criminal behavior. We know for certain that investments in public education, sensible gun control, infrastructure investments in all neighborhoods, political inclusion of all citizens are all guaranteed to be effective. These well-known aspects of social well-being work in many other societies around the world. The issue is that the American public has been led to believe that it does not deserve investment in every child and every neighborhood. Hence, we are the most violent society in the world that is not in a formal civil war. Chris, you were saying earlier, I think something that tracks with Kenny here, about closing the gap between the haves and the have-nots, and
yeah, you know,
making opportunity available to everyone.
Absolutely. I was reading a New York Times article not too long ago. The United States has less than 5% of the world's population, but has almost a quarter of the world's prisoners. So our jails are full, and that was according to the International Center for Prison Studies. So again, we have a lot of people behind bars. I would tell you to point to someone in the community, again, who's really made strides, is Tim Street, director at Shepherd Community Center. And if listeners haven't sauntered over to see what he's doing over there in the Martindale Brightwood community, it's making a difference. It's getting kids off the streets, it's getting families off the streets and into the Shepherd Community Center, where a faith-based curriculum is teaching from the beginning how to put yourself through school, how to stay healthy, how to find a job. When we take care of those who are mentally ill, I know that a lot of those behind bars and a lot of those committing these crimes are mentally ill. We're taking care of future crime and future problems. So I point towards Shepherd. I point towards the Excel Centers put on by Goodwill Industries as two entities in our community that should be lavishly praised, should be funded, and should be explored for what they're doing and how they're making a difference, starting with our youth. And you know, when you're hungry and you have chaos at home, it's unsettling. All of us who have raised children know that. A good night's rest, a full belly, and a shelter over your head where you know you have a loving family, and you have peace, and you're going to be more productive as a citizen. So getting ahead of early childhood education and making sure next time our state house is in full swing that we start from the beginning, and that's when, in my opinion, early childhood education.
I would like to just piggyback off of what you're saying, Chris. And again, I think that, you know, that's great. And I'm familiar with Jay Height and Shepherd and some of the others that you call. However, there is a percentage of youth that are being overlooked that you won't find in Shepherd, places like Shepherd. And when we talk about the paramount subject of today, we're talking about violence. Those children are not the violence, are the ones who are out committing the violence in the community. I am a firm believer in what you said about early childhood, reaching them. I just spoke to this yesterday at another station. The fact that we have to start, we wait until they get 14, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. You know, well, we really need to start with them at 6 and 7 years old before they get there. And I shared this also on yesterday that when we talk about as far as the violence and them that the violence is directed toward, that are participating, 80% of our youth in society today, they want to do just what young people do. They want to have a good time, enjoy themselves. As a matter of fact, you would be surprised at how many young people today are out here now. They're just as detrified and horrified at the violence that's going on, because oftentimes the funerals that we attend, the funerals that us that are on the front lines out there, we're in the trenches every day, the 10-point coalition. We are in the streets every day. And the funerals that we are going to, these young people are sick and tired of going to their brothers, their sisters, their cousins. They're sick and tired of going to the funeral. So they, too, are getting tired. You have 15% of our youth today that lie somewhat what I call in the balance. They could go either or. We have what I would like to say are 5 percenters that are the main liners that are contributing to the purchasing of illegal guns, the ones that have no respect for their lives, so they have no respect for your life. These are the ones that the group that we really need to be getting to from our perspective. But I do agree with you the fact that, you know, starting early, not waiting until they get up into their early teens, because by that time, most of the time, they have already been influenced by something or someone to go either one way or the other.
We've also gotten a couple of emails, or actually one of them is a Facebook message, dealing with the question of guns. Email from Janice says, perhaps the NRA convention isn't something so wrong, but the Indy Star campaign, which featured a young child holding what appeared to be a rifle and hosting a Show Us Your Guns campaign on Twitter for NRA campaign, was highly irresponsible. Even the lack of sensible gun laws trumps this cultural problem. I can't, it says prevented, but I think she meant presented by Indy Star. And then the question is, will you call out your colleagues for promoting this culture? I think we all, in fairness, Janice, I think we all need to take a look at how we treat the subject of guns. Indy Star, you know, this program, all of it, to make sure that we aren't glamorizing it. Eric, via Facebook, says guns aren't the problem. Stripping people of their civil and constitutional liberties won't solve things. And Senate Bill 229 did not allow people to carry firearms on school property. If we spent half as much time trying to get guns out of the hands of criminals as we seem to be spending trying to get them out of the hands of law-abiding citizens, we might get somewhere. I, for one, applaud our state legislators for protecting and enhancing our right to keep and bear arms for the defense of ourselves in the state as laid out in our Indiana Constitution. Hopefully true constitutional carry is next. But that doesn't that sort of sidestep? I mean, we lose citizens in this country by gun at a rate 20 times greater than the rest of the developed world. I mean, Chris, isn't it fair to say we do have a gun problem of some sort? Every other country, every other developed country in the world, except for those that are in civil wars, seems to have got a better handle on this than we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, it's in hosting the National Rifle Association's convention this past April, I think the city as a whole, our community as a whole, learned a lot about gun rights, gun control. It was First Amendment versus Second Amendment. We heard a lot of protesting, but a lot of advocating for the right to bear arms. I think as a community, we had to ask ourselves, what role do guns play? And where are they coming from and going? And how are they permitted? I think if you asked and took a poll of Indianapolis residents, we probably wouldn't fully understand how you go about getting permits and how many permits are out there, and those who are law-abiding and those who are not, and where the guns are going and manufactured. So I think, again, having a convention like the NRA, it's not only an economic boost, but it forces us into tough conversations with our office mates, with our family and friends, and with those who don't necessarily look like us and talk like us, so that we have that conversation and are more aware of what's going on around us. I couldn't help but think when the suspect who's in custody and for the killing of Officer Wren, to read, and it really hurt me to read that his father had been afflicted with the law and had been in trouble with the law, and I couldn't help but thinking, is that a learned behavior? Mm. You know, did he grow up without a dad, knowing that there was violence to be had? You know, it's one of those things where, again, you got to, at that young age, you got to hold them tight and teach them well.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Gideon that's going to give us a lot to chew on in the relatively few minutes we've got left. Says, I think part of the problem is we haven't really gotten to the bottom of this problem. If this is gang-related, isn't there any way the police, FBI, can infiltrate these gangs and stop this senseless destruction of lives? If this is a mental health issue, can we help these kids? Can we initiate illegal gun buyback programs? Thanks, Gideon. Is there, and I'll throw it out to both of you, you know, are there some concrete steps we could take right now for people? You know, we're obviously all engaged by these tragedies at this moment, the reason we're having this conversation. What's something specific that people could do right now that would make a difference? I'll start, Chris, with you, and then let Reverend Lester have the last word.
Yeah, I would say that talking is one thing, but action is another. So big brothers, big sisters, I would say don't sit idle. Don't just talk, make an action. Reach out. Talk to someone who doesn't look like you, who you may not know, and take that next step and care about your community, because it is about people, and it's about people feeling that they're cared for. So really roll up your sleeves and get active in the community.
Okay. Reverend Lester.
Well, hey, Chris, you kind of wrapped it up for me in reality, because that is exactly what we do as the 10-Point Coalition Outreach Workers. We are faithfully, devotedly, we have people who put their lives on the line every day of the week. We have teams that are on the streets of Indianapolis, the inner city, Wednesday through Saturday. We don't wear bulletproof vests. We are out there and we're doing exactly that. We are engaging to empower people for improvement. I think that on that last email, John, that you just read, once again, I think that we have the pieces to the puzzle. We have the answer. It is about us just learning how to come together and to be able to work together and folk realizing what lane they're in. I kudos to you, Chris, for things that you have said in reference to early childhood. I think all of it is components by which we will find the answer, that the solution is there.
And I think that probably will have to be the last word. But I'd like to thank both of my guests, the Reverend Horatio Lester, who is with the Indy's 10-Point Coalition, and Chris Gall, who is VP of Communications and Marketing, for the visit, Indy. I'd like to thank both of you. I think this
thank
has been
you,
a
sir.
Very provocative conversation. Chris, thank you also.
John,
for
thanks for having me on, and Reverend Horatio for 10 Points. Great work in the community.
Thank you, sir.
And I also would like to thank all of our listeners. We weren't able to get to all of your questions or comments. I can promise you this. We are not going to stop this conversation. We will continue it. For now, though, I really would like to thank you for spending this time with us and having this important discussion. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.